AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Go loud.
Developers say they can't make any money out of it, so maybe we do need to get rid of Windows, you know? If Michael D. Higgins was going to invade Poland, it would be from the East. in fairness to him, right?
I'm starting to lose my marbles.
Such an old-fashioned phrase. The perverts. It's been a while since we've heard about perverts, actually.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops. We are a comedy news podcast with me, Aoife Murr. I'm an author and a journalist, and I make documentaries now. And my freewheeling host, who has left me for a much more funny and much more famous woman this week, it's Colm O'Regan.
Right. Yeah, I'll tell you who that was at the end of the show. I've also left Aoife because I'm working in Sligo at the moment, staring as we speak at Ben Bulbin, shrouded in mist and cows grazing peacefully. And you know, when you get out of the city, you just get a different perspective on things.
This week we have the Nobel Peace Prize, which didn't go to another dairy person. I was pipped to the post by Venezuela's leader of the opposition, Donald Trump, also didn't receive it. The Gaza ceasefire that Israel is already not adhering to. The presidential election gets dirty with the emergence of Ivan Yates and his terrible political advice. And a rent register so that your landlord can stop ripping you off. The Nobel Peace Prize was awarded last week, and to absolutely nobody's surprise, apart from him, it was not Donald Trump. It was Maria Corina Machado, the Venezuelan opposition leader, who was barred from standing in last year's presidential election in her own country. She won the Nobel Prize on Friday, which it was announced on Twitter. It was said that she won for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy. The chair of the Nobel Committee, Jorgen Watney Friedens, very sorry to any of our Norwegian listeners, said she was a brave and committed champion of peace to a woman who keeps the flame of democracy burning amidst a growing darkness. They said that she met all the criteria laid out by Alfred Nobel for the prize. So who is she? Colm, do you know anything about this lady?
I know who she isn't, and that's probably where I start from. Okay. In terms of this. From what I've seen of her, what's interesting about her is she's complicated.
Yeah, she is the 58-year-old leader of the opposition party in Venezuela called Vente Venezuela. She campaigns for transparent democracy and advocates for liberal economic reforms, which include, I don't know why this can be described as liberal, privatization of the state-owned enterprises such as Venezuela's oil company. But she does believe in the creation of welfare programs aimed at aiding the country's poorest people. She's the eldest of four daughters. She has an engineering degree, like someone on this podcast. Mm-hmm. She has three children, and she entered politics in 2002. This is all well and good. She has put up a good fight against Maduro. He declared victory, which was disputed by the opposition. And then she announced that she would go into hiding in Venezuela and says that she fears for her life under Maduro. So she actually accepted the award kind of over the phone. Like she's still in hiding.
Yeah.
It has been noted that she expressed solidarity with Israel after the October 7th attacks and has never voiced any support for Palestine. She is an ally of Benjamin Netanyahu. And she said, the struggle of Venezuela is the struggle of Israel. She even promised to move the Venezuelan embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv if she came to power.
Do you know, I like this story because this is the world is complicated story. She is not Donald Trump. She's pro-democracy. She is anti-Maduro. And at one point, Nicolas Maduro was the darling of the left because he believed in nationalizing Venezuelan oil and standing up to imperial powers. But he's also an awful person who ended up turning into a dictator, which so often happens with anybody from whatever side, whether they're left or right, who become populist. They neglect, they don't trust democracy after that. She also, she's pro-Israel. Like, there are no perfect heroes. There are nobody. I agree with everything they say. And often you will not find somebody who agrees with you on everything, you know. And this is an example of foreign policy is complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated. But also handing the Nobel Peace Prize to someone who supports Israel in the bombing of Gaza in retaliation for October 7th is nuts. And then in saying that, what does the Nobel Peace Prize even mean? They gave it to Barack Obama. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like they haven't given it to people who supported bombing Middle Eastern countries before.
Yeah, but if you went back through all of the winners, I imagine.
Not John Hume.
Not John Hume, yeah, literally the only one. But F.W. de Klerk won it, didn't he? He did some bad stuff. Like, you will not find...
Apart from the Dairyman.
Apart from...
The Dairyman.
Who's that?
John Hume!
John Hume, oh, sorry, that's right. I thought it was some other Dairyman one. I thought we've referenced John Hume. No, I mean, yeah, he's fairly uncomplicatedly.
John Hume, I bet, never bombed anyone, never advocating for to bomb anyone. Loved a whiskey, didn't really his own party at times.
Yeah, I'm sure we can smear the BJ's out of him. We'll find something, a train ticket that was reused a number of times. But anyway, the point is, when the winner was announced as Mrs. Not Trump, which is almost what people heard, they went, yay. And then they went, oh, and that's modern politics, I think. There are very few people who are uncomplicatedly somebody that you absolutely agree with.
Yeah, and Donald Trump didn't win the Nobel Peace Prize, but he was sure to let everyone know that Maria did phone him as soon as she won it.
Yeah.
And congratulated him as well for all Donald Trump's hard work. There is also a train of thought that Donald Trump might win the Nobel Peace Prize next year. There was also a theory that they didn't give it to Donald Trump this year because they thought if they could dangle it in front of him for long enough, because all of the ceasefire talk with Israel and Gaza is basically only going to last for as long as Donald Trump pays attention to it. So speaking of Donald Trump's hard work, we'll move on to our next story. As of today, 2,000 Palestinian detainees, who most of which had been held without trial, kidnapped by Israel, have been released. Hamas have released all 20 Israeli captives that were held in Gaza and a number of the bodies as well. President Trump is now on a tour between Israel and Egypt. He addressed the Israeli Knesset yesterday, in which he called on the Israeli president to pardon Benjamin Netanyahu for his numerous corruption charges. And then they will have a peace summit in the Egyptian resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh. Trump said he was thrilled that the war is over and a tremendous day for the Middle East. Trump and the leaders of Egypt, Turkey and Qatar signed a document as guarantors to the Gaza deal. And under this is the rules and regulations for the ceasefire. The UN confirmed this morning there would be more aid, including tents, meat, flour, medicine, funneled into the war-ravaged Gaza. Although we did hear this morning already that Israel has broken the ceasefire and opened fire on a number of Gazan civilians in Gaza City that they are now labelling Hamas.
And also armed gangs in Gaza, who it's not clear who they're allied with, have also
murdered a journalist. So Palestinian journalist Sally Al-Jafara was killed in Gaza City just days after the ceasefire was announced. He was 28 years old and gained prominence for his videos covering the Israeli war on Gaza. He was shot while covering a clash in the Sabra neighborhood. According to reports, dozens were killed in the clashes between Hamas security forces and armed members of the Duhmush gang in Gaza City. The two gangs exchanged fire near the city's Jordanian hospital. So even after the ceasefire, fighting continues, and we know that settler violence continues in the West Bank as well. The ceasefire does not extend to the West Bank.
As is ever the case when the quote-unquote war is over or the major bombings, other stuff happens, and that's where attention is needed most, is that once the big news is over, the news doesn't stop. Like Donald Trump, it was his influence that has brought the thing to an end, but it was so bizarre watching him talk to the Israeli parliament. Like, you're looking at him going, the world is acclaiming you for bringing peace, and you just couldn't let it go without saying something egregiously. What the fuck? Like, you know, being in parliament, the ceasefire has happened. That is a relatively straightforward event that you can...
He can claim so much victory.
...take credit for.
Yeah.
And nowhere on anyone's list is, we gave you a lot of bombs, don't even know what some of those weapons were, we gave you a lot of good weapons, you know, in a celebratory way, to laughter from within the parliament. And you're going, Jesus, he is insane. Like, this is... Like, you have done something good. It's like he didn't know how to react to doing a good thing.
So it very much appears that this was an offer that was made during the time of Joe Biden as well. And in the first step, it would be that Hamas would give up the hostages, and then, and then, and then. And what previous, what the Joe Biden administration did, was waited until what the next step would be. What Donald Trump, in the way that he does politics, took Hamas at their word that they would give back the hostages, if Israel would give back the prisoners that they have detained without trial, and ran with it. And the difference is, he allowed his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to negotiate with Hamas as well, which is very, very strange, as that man has no security clearances and no experience.
But it's interesting, like, his way of doing things worked in this instant, possibly because if it came to it, he would betray Benjamin Netanyahu, whereas Biden and Netanyahu have been friends forever. Biden so hamstrung by weird sense of duty, and I don't know what, to do nothing, because it was inaction on Biden's part. He did not put any pressure on, and Trump, for all his faults, had no hostages to fortune with Netanyahu. He would sell him down the river, wouldn't he? Like, that's, well, is that the
feeling. The feeling very much was that Trump doesn't need anything from Netanyahu. They were 2 years into a genocide. He was losing support both home and away. The recognition of Palestinian states by Western European countries, and the, like, worldwide protests, which he doesn't care very much about, but he knows how much Trump hates war. A lot of the foreign policy stuff I'd read this morning from different Yank analysis says that Trump was able to do this because of the style of politics he does, but also because Benjamin Netanyahu has been weakened, and Trump doesn't want anything from him. He has him by the short and curlies, because Benjamin Netanyahu completely relies on Trump.
Can I ask you, given that there are people protests, flotillas, in parallel with machinations involving multiple countries, all maybe with selfish needs and altruistic needs, what role do you think protest played in this for people now who went on marches and they're feeling, did we make a difference? Should I feel, I'm happy that it's a ceasefire. Should I feel that it would have happened without us or with us? What happens in that kind of scenario, do you think?
I think it's easy to think Netanyahu doesn't care. But I listen to quite a lot of the liberal elite podcasts from New York, the New York Times, the New Yorker, Pod Save America. And a lot of the people who work there are what are known as, you know, like, liberal Zionists and Jewish people. And a lot of them talked about the international reputation of Israel across the world. And they said that they did not think, as Jewish people, that Israel's reputation would ever recover. And a lot of that, I think, when you're starting to lose the liberal Zionist, which, to be honest, I think is an oxymoron. I don't think there could be such a thing as a liberal Zionist. But I think if you're starting to lose that crowd, I think you're in a huge amount of bother. And also, there were protests within Israel itself. We saw it, not necessarily for Gazan people, but for the release of hostages. The Israeli hostage families have no time for Benjamin Netanyahu and did not feel that they were a priority from the Israeli government. So I think in Ireland, we are very small and, you know, the people of Cork have been protesting every week for Gaza. And I think it would be easy to discount it. Like, what does Benjamin Netanyahu care about Ireland? But it's not just Ireland. You know, my brother lives in Amsterdam, Holland, and there's a huge Gaza protest there. We saw it in Berlin. This is an Israeli problem that was made global by Israel's actions. And governments across Europe were trying to reckon with their own people's support of Gaza. Mm. And I don't think we can discount that.
Like, it's attrition. Protests do attrit as well because they wear the government down, don't they?
Yeah, and I think Benjamin Netanyahu knows that his time is running out. And I think Trump, for all his faults, I don't think anyone else could have done this apart from Trump, because Trump does not acknowledge traditional protocols and means of diplomacy, and neither does Benjamin Netanyahu. So maybe this was the only way to do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we sincerely wish it to last. For the first and foremost being the ceasefire. The injustices go on, but there are probably 200 Palestinians alive today, as of Tuesday afternoon, who under normal circumstances would be dead. And we just hope that continues. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the presidential election now, Aoife. And given the past week we've had with podcasters talking about the presidential election, I'm guessing I should just apologise now and leave the podcast based on it's been quite the week for people in front of microphones in studios talking about the presidential election. It's been busy.
That's right, Colm. So many of our listeners are of a younger vintage, little fresh out of the egg. So for those who weren't alive during or weren't conscious during the crash, they won't know. Lucky them, who Ivan Yates is. So yeah, Ivan Yates, for those who don't remember, he is a Wexford man who once owned a chain of 64 betting shops around the country. Then he went into politics. There was speculation after John Bruton resigned as leader of Fine Gael that Yates would take over. However, he decided not to. During the crash in January 2011, it was announced that his company had gone into receivership and he signed a personal guarantee, which would be the source of years of misery.
Oh, you can't be digging into the man's past going back that far. All he said was smear the BGs.
No. So he moved to Wales to avail of the UK's much shorter bankruptcy process and endured a terrible loneliness there. Ivan Yates, the former Fine Gael minister turned political commentator, and I'm doing air quotes, he made comments last week on his News Talk radio show, which is called Calling It. He was asked by Sean Defoe, lovely friend of mine, about the presidential election and the head-to-head race between Catherine Conley and Heather Humphreys. Ivan Yates said, when it becomes a two-horse race, it's not the personality, it's the narrative. And the narrative that has prevailed is the government sort of sucks. I won't argue with you there, Ivan Yates. So I'm going to play you what Ivan Yates told Sean Defoe he would do if Fine Gael asked him for advice.
So if you're asking me, okay, so Fine Gael ring me and say, how do we reverse this, right? You're going to be shocked about this now, right? I would go bullheaded. Do you want a Provo in the park? Is she a Russian asset? I would smear the bejesus out of her simply because you have nothing to lose.
So let's just take this bit by bit, right? I think it speaks to a type of really nasty and toxic politics that I don't think Irish people, and I don't think Heather Humphreys would even be interested in. And it went type of viral this week. Catherine Conley was asked about it. She said that she found it quite shocking. She said, you know, even the language, you smear the bejesus out of her. And the one thing I would say is that Fine Gael have repeatedly said, and Heather Humphreys has repeatedly said, that Ivan Yates is not in any way involved in her campaign. The best comment I read this week about Ivan Yates was from Health Minister Jennifer Carl McNeill. So this is someone in Fine Gael of Ivan Yates' previous party. She said, "I think Ivan Yates predicted I wouldn't get elected in 2020. Did I stop listening to him then? Or did I stop listening to him when he predicted that Sinn Féin were going to take 70 seats in the last election? Or is it his gloriously inconsistent, patchy political analysis? I can't remember when I stopped listening to him, but I can assure you that Ivan Yates doesn't have my ear or anyone else in Fine Gael."
Wow. There's Jennifer Carl McNeill Stan.
Yeah.
Aoife Grace Moore, to give you your full two names.
I've always said Jennifer Carl McNeill has got Tánaiste written all over her.
She is your Fine Gael spirit animal.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd be really happy to hear that as well. However, what Ivan Yates has done is then every time there is a criticism of Catherine Connolly, it gives the public and they say, well, is this not what yous were trying to do? Is this not what yous wanted? Weren't you going to smear the bejesus out of her? And I think, as a journalist, this is what puts people off politics and off elections. They know it's not true. He says that. I know it's not true, but it doesn't matter. Say it anyway. And that is just so toxic. It's nasty. It puts people off. It's not what the presidency is about. It's not what this election has been like. I think, you know, for the most part, there's been debates, but there hasn't been any nastiness. And I think that's down to the two candidates that are involved. But I just thought it was like, it tells you everything you need to know about Ivan Yates, to be honest. I thought it was rotten. And I think people who know Ivan Yates wouldn't be one bit surprised, but I just couldn't believe it. He said it out loud in the microphone.
Yeah. And was anybody going to smear the bejesus out of her? Like, was he vocalizing what would have been happening?
He said if Fine Gael asked him, but to be clear, Fine Gael have not asked him. The last time Fine Gael asked him for anything was quite a long time ago.
Yeah. Like, there must be a better way of doing the presidential election campaign. Like, because it suffers from this every time, which is the president can do A, B, C and D. Let's spend the whole time talking about E, F, G and H. Now, if there was more candidates, there'd be less time for people to just, well, I mean, you know, podcasts should be banned anyway. I mean, I don't even know why we're still here.
Actually, there was a very...
As soon as I open my mouth, I'm like, whose campaign will I hurt the most by the things that are about to come out of my mouth the next? There must be a better way. Like, the debates are useful. I suppose they're forced to echo what
people
are thinking.
They're useful when they ask questions about the presidency. They are not useful when they are asking candidates, both candidates, things that have nothing to do with being the president.
Is it weird that I think that both candidates would do a perfectly fine job? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't see either of them being nuts.
No.
Like, they're both competent. They're both competent politicians who know how to give a speech, know how to read a brief, are familiar with policy, know what is the right thing to say to the president of Liechtenstein in a particular
There's
situation.
There's a type of hysteria taking over the press now and men on Twitter. You know that thing of, like, middle-aged men on Twitter make up a situation in their head and then get mad about it. That has happened constantly throughout this. All of us know that the president doesn't do that much. They go to the GA, they sign legislation, they meet with figureheads. Like, and also this notion of, like, what would they be like in the RS? You know, we can't have, like, even the notion of, like, this big lefty in the park. Have you seen he's in the park at the minute?
Yeah. Like how many times has Michael D. Higgins caused a constitutional crisis in 14 years? I think he said the housing crisis is bad.
Yeah.
He sent condolences to Iran on the death of their president or prime minister, which is a thing you generally do. And maybe did he send the condolences on death of Castro? I can't remember. Or maybe that's just, and also he invaded Poland. Like, you know, but from the East, I stress from the East.
Yeah.
That's where, if Michael D. Higgins was going to invade Poland, it would be from the East. in fairness to him, right? But by and large, it's fine. Like, I would be more worried if it was somebody who did not know how to hold political office.
Yeah.
And when faced with a situation, and I don't mean that it's a closed shop, and no, I'd gladly take any of the candidates who went forward, even Michael Flatley, if they'd done a feckin' tidy towns or a councillor or been a senator for a while. Like, it's a skill. And I've said this before, politics is a profession. We can slag it off. We can say they're up to this and they're up to that. But even the worst politician knows how to do politics.
Yeah.
And the presidential election is a political campaign, and the presidency is a political role. That doesn't mean it's party political. It's political, like as in involved in the government. So, yeah, we're just... Sorry, here's me saying exactly the same thing 15 times. but that either would be fine.
I think what's happened is the presidential race now, whether they like it or not, has become a referendum on the government.
Mm.
Because Heather Humphreys is Fine Gael to her bones. She's been a minister three times over. She's been in cabinet. She is Fine Gael, you know, through and through. And now with no Fianna Fáil candidate, Micheál Martin said this week, the Taoiseach, that he is going to vote for Heather Humphreys, but he's not going to call on his members to vote for her. So she's become the government candidate, whether she likes it or not. And this has basically become now a referendum on the government. And to be honest, like, the presidential is something that really just runs on vibes. So
like, Heather Humphreys gave the good COVID dole, though. That was her, wasn't it?
She did. She did the COVID dole. Other news this week in the race for the Irish Labour TD Alan Kelly says he will be backing Heather Humphreys because he doesn't like Catherine Connolly. Former Green Party TD Brian Leddon has also said that he will back Heather Humphreys. And Paul Murphy, the People Before Profit TD, has sent a legal letter to Heather Humphreys about remarks that she made during an RTE debate last week. In 2017, Mr. Murphy and five other men were found not guilty of all charges on falsely imprisoning former Taoiseach Joan Brittain in Jobstown in 2014. Heather Humphreys made comments about that, which Paul Murphy found defamatory, and he has now threatened to sue her.
This is like a row on Christmas Day where people are bringing stuff up from way back, including you, Aoife, like right back to 2008.
I like to give people just context.
That's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of context. It's just, this is what the presidential election is doing to us. We're just, you know, and you know, you never put the toilet seat down, and that's what's going on in terms of the argument. The sooner the election happens, go and vote anyway, and let's just get this election over with so we can get on with Halloween.
Yeah, so October 24th is the ballot day. You should use your vote, whoever you want to vote for. And I would like
to be Jesus out of that ballot box with your vote.
Smear it with a big S.
Smear your pencil. smear your pencil. The bejesus out of that ballot paper.
Yeah, and just to add that I have done previous work for the Catherine Connolly campaign as a press strategist and consultant. I am not paid by her to talk about her on this podcast.
Okay, I'm not paid by anyone, so I'll talk about them all.
As the presidential campaign continues, what else continues is the housing crisis. This week, it was announced that landlords will now have to reveal how much rent they are charging their tenants. They'll have to publicly disclose rent prices under new government laws, which are aimed at improving transparency and compliance. This is part of a slate of reforms to the Rental Tenancies Board, also known as the RTB. So this will establish a new rent price register, which is similar to the property price register that tracks the sale of homes. The rent register is apparently to help tenants when it comes to rent prices across the country. So it is being implemented to ensure that landlords comply with the law changes on rent price increases in high demand areas. So we talked before on this podcast about the change to the RPZ, the rent pressure zone legislation, which is restricted to a maximum of 2% increase in rents each year. But now there will also be a requirement for your landlord to provide information on the building energy rating of the property and the number of bedrooms and the property type. Other places have this. It's mad that we didn't have this before. This proposal will allow landlords to reset the rent they charge to market rate, either when a new tenancy is created or every 6 years. So the government say that it'll focus how market rents are determined. So it means that the landlord is going to be required to show you how the resetted rent is fair in comparison to your neighbours. you know, in other similar properties in the area. These laws, the government says, will effectively ban no-fault evictions, which we know are a scourge on the rental community. It means that they'll have to prove that the tenant did something wrong if they do want to evict them. And smaller landlords are permitted to evict a tenant in some circumstances, including if they have an immediate family member or are planning to live in the property themselves. I don't know if we have the same TikTok algorithm, but there was a young woman, I believe it was in Dublin, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but a young woman on TikTok this week, she's sitting in her car and she gets a letter and she's really upset before she even opens the letter. And she says, I think this is a letter telling me I'm being evicted. And it's her fourth eviction in 4 or 5 years. And she opens the letter in her in the front seat of her car and she is bawling, crying. And that video has been now viewed on TikTok over 1 million times. And it really just, like, the comments were all so supportive and there was just so many people saying, this has happened to me. I totally, you know, understand where you're coming from. She said she's never missed a rent payment in her life. You know, she just keeps, like, the landlords just keep evicting. And she seems to be, you know, relatively young, in her 20s. So I'd say she's in a lot of, like, share houses or whatever.
Yeah.
And it really just, I think the budget as well last week really just crystallized for me that, like, this is not a country for renters and this is not a government for renters. And I obviously am biased in a way because I'm a renter myself and have been evicted in the last couple of years. But it just, it really makes me feel like there, it's no country for young people. It's no country for people on minimum wage.
Like, whatever about the market or forces beyond our control or the price of steel or lots of things that people wring their hands over, there's an element of cruelty at the heart of a system that surely can be tweaked to reduce, even without fixing the problem, but to reduce harm.
Mm.
Like, that, surely that must be a focus, because, well, like, while waiting for the bigger solution, the big brains to come up with the massive
what big brains? Because, like, housing experts have already told the government their plan's not working, and we've had the same government for the last, like, Fine Gael have been in charge of some level of government for the last 14 years. How much longer do they want? Like, the average rent at the minute is 6.9% higher than this time last year. And the average rent in Ireland is over €2,000 per month.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and you're, and clearly your strategy isn't working, surely the goal would be then, okay, I have to change my strategy. In what world is this working for people?
Yeah. So this register, we don't know if we'll be able to look it up. I mean, it's analogous to the property price register, which, if nothing else, was a huge boost for nosy bastards all over the country.
It does appear it'll be like the property price register, where you can look up how much a house cost the last time it was sold. So you would assume if it's to work in a transparent and helpful way,
yeah,
then you will be able to, if you're looking up to rent a gaff, you can look up and see how much the tenant before you paid.
Because the property price register has, if anything, it has reduced the level of property-related gossip by 317%, a number I just made up, because finally we know how much that house went for. That's like, I mean, people have got married based on just, you know, small talk over how much a house went for down the road. So maybe this rent price register just takes some of the bullshit and the,
yeah,
pretend out of all of this, forces people to reckon with, actually, do I need that much money? And maybe it will reduce some misery. I don't know. It's a tweak, but we need more than tweaks.
Yeah, and just to add to this, because it's not me just complaining, housing experts have also said that Ireland has entered a race to the bottom when it comes to measures aimed at boosting the supply of apartments, and it risks creating communities that people don't want to live in. That is from Orla Hegarty. She is an architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture, Planning and Environment in UCD. She said the recent measures outlined by the Department of Housing, along with a new VAT rate reduction for apartments, are chasing smaller and smaller apartments. We could waste a lot of resources building them and find out they're not suitable for what people need. So there you are. A race, yeah, to the bottom. If that's not a perfect description of housing policy in this country.
Yeah.
God, if anyone wants to read that article and interview with Orla Hegarty, it is in the Irish Examiner.
But can't we just do it right? I'm just wondering, have we thought about doing it right?
Yeah, have we thought about changing the housing policy that has been proven not to work for the last decade and try something else? No? Yeah. Anybody?
I mean, developers say they can't make any money out of it, so maybe we do need to get rid of windows, you know? Sure, can't you go outside if you want to see the outside?
I know, but then what would perverts do if apartments had no windows?
The pervert lobby is pretty strong, all right.
I'm starting to lose my marbles.
That's an old-fashioned phrase. The perverts. It's been a while since we've heard about perverts, actually. What are they up to?
If you haven't heard about perverts, it means you are the pervert.
That's not how it works. Not how it works. So
Callum, what's your good news this week?
Well, let's start with a personal good news. I got to interview somebody amazing on Monday night. Miriam Margulies.
I'm not mad at any celebrities, but I think she's my favourite celebrity.
Yeah, like, I spent a lot of time listening to her books and watching her interviews. There's nothing turning up, you know, to kind of change my opinion that she's quite a nice person. It's
a delight. She is a delight.
A delight and a great entertainer. So it's...
What were you interviewing her for?
For her new book.
Oh, it's called like The Little Book of...
The Little Book of Miriam, yeah.
Oh, gorge. And
so, like, I mean, I'm sure they were applauding me, but I walked out with her onto the stage and the wall of noise...
Yeah.
And
she was at the convention centre in Dublin as well.
That's right.
And people just adore her, and rightly so. And was there any sage advice you took from little Miriam?
Pelvic floor exercises. Start them never too late, I think.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
The best time was before.
I'm doing them
the
right now.
The second best time is now. Yeah. We get that new yoga ball into studio. So, I mean, let's
and what else? Other than vaginas, what else did she talk about?
Was a lot of vaginas, in fairness.
I would say so. Is she queer? Or is she straight?
Oh, she's a lesbian, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
she's been with
that,
her
yeah.
partner since 1968,
aww.
I think. Heather. And she speaks frankly, funnily, honestly about lots of things. And she is now trying to make sure there's a sign language interpreter at all her shows, both for inclusion, but also because she spends the first 5 minutes getting the sign language interpreter to sign all of the filth. So to keep this family rating that we have, I'll just say I know how to do one off the wrist in sign language.
That's so nice.
Oh. I think that's good enough. I was going to tell people that coal mining is finally being overtaken by renewable energies, but you know, maybe that's for another day.
No, let's hear it. So coal's on its way out.
Has that segue ever happened before? No, this coal, in terms of energy, has been overtaken by renewables for the first time over the last while. And you know the way Trump, he's banning solar farms and he's talking about big, beautiful coal.
Mm.
But experts reckon that a lot of the coal mines that he's talking about, or the coal concessions he's selling, the coal will never be mined. It's
good.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
Somebody was selling a coal concession recently and it worked out at they paid the average price of a tenth of a cent per ton per coal, meaning that's the only way they could make any kind of money out of it. Or in fact, they probably never expected it and they'll just leave it in the ground. So it's the kind of stuff that happens while nobody's watching all over the world.
I'm delighted. Love to hear it. And
I know that you're a real energy mix person. What's the latest on the energy mix, Colm?
I do have a lot of climate anxiety. I do worry a lot about the climate and the heating of our world and all our little animals. Our listener good news this week is we got post. I actually texted you a photo of this, Colm, but you haven't looked yet. We'll actually put a photo up on Instagram. We got a huge jar of sweets because it's Maths Week 2025 Sweet Jar Challenge. So we got this giant jar of sweets and then it was three questions and then each of the answers is a number on the padlock and then the padlock opens the jar of sweets. Me and Siobhan tried it for 20 minutes by ourselves, couldn't get it. So I have texted you the questions, Colm, to see if we can get it open.
Okay.
But we wanted to mention mathsweek.ie. It's fun for everyone with over 500,000 participants expected, including students, families and communities across the island. So there you are.
Yeah, do look it up. They do great stuff every week. They have cool stuff with maths, magic and all sorts of numbery type things. Yeah, 500,000 kids involved every year. It's pure vocation with them.
Yeah.
Set to, I think, CalMast. is the kind of maths department linked to Setu, and they're all sound and happy to support them. And yeah, I used to have a maths podcast. I gave it up to do this.
Only slightly better paid.
Yes.
I'm very, very bad at maths. It's always been a really insecurity of mine. I can't really do maths. So yeah, all the best in maths week.
Maybe you just never met the right maths, Aoife.
Oh, well, this is... Okay, Colm, here's the three questions. What is 2 divided by 1/2?
Yeah, 4.
Oh, we got that on our second call. A bottle and a cork cost 1.10 to make. The bottle costs 1 euro more than the cork. How much does the cork cost?
I need to do algebra. A bottle and a cork cost
1.10 to make. The bottle costs 1 euro more than the cork. How much does the cork cost?
Oh, it's 5 cent.
What? How?
1.05 plus 0.05 is 1.10.
I don't get it. How do you know?
Because if the cork costs 5 cents and the bottle costs 1 euro more, then it costs 1 euro and 5 cent. And 1 euro and 5 cent plus 5 cent is 1 euro 10 cent.
We got this one ourselves. Well, actually, we had the technician help us. If it takes a farmer 1.5 hours to plow 1.5 hectares, how long would it take 2 farmers to plow 2 hectares? We got
edit
this
out the 15 minutes in between. So it's 1.5 hours to plow 1.5 hectares, an hour per hectare. Half an hour, is it?
No, it's 1 hour. We and Siobhan got it.
Okay, all right.
Hold on. Ah, it opened! Okay, sweeties.
Are you going to eat the sweets live on the podcast for that no. ASMR that nobody paid for?
Mukbang. That's us for this week's episode of A Few Scoops. I, thankfully, have no plans again this weekend. Oh, but last weekend, I went to see Her in the Gate Theatre, written by my gorgeous friend, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan, listener of the show. They have announced new dates just today. If anyone hasn't seen it, I would highly recommend you go see the show. It blew me away. I laughed, I cried. It is unbelievable. Katrina's book is obviously wildly successful and the play obviously is as well, but it's just, I knew it was going to be good. I was taken aback. Colm, have you anything, you doing anything good this weekend?
I am doing in the local community centre, giving away free bulbs for spring flowers.
Oh, what kind of flowers?
Snowdrops. I sound like Dana. Snowdrops, bluebells, crocus, and another worthy flower anyway. So that's in our local community centre.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Clothes swap for Halloween and a free bulbs for people. So I'm doing that because there's some shit about to come out about me next week. after the presidential election, people will be going, right, we've nothing to do.
Cancel Colm O'Regan.
Yeah, hired a lot of studios. So I'm just banking some goodwill with the woke left because I'm about to let you down with some revelations.
Never meet your heroes, folks. As always, we'd like to thank our producer, Siobhan Walsh. She puts up with me and Colm every week. And if you have any good news, please get in touch with me or Colm on Instagram, or you can email your good news to afewscoops@goloudnow.com. Thank you.
Bye.